Hello, and welcome to the 404 Media Podcast, where we bring you unparalleled access to hidden worlds, both online and IRL. 404 Media is a journalist-founded company and needs your support. To subscribe, go to 404media.co. As well as bonus content every single week, subscribers also get access to additional episodes where we respond to their best comments. Gain access to that content at 404media.co. I'm your host, Joseph, and with me are 404 Media co-founders Sam Cole.
Hey.
Emmanuel Mayberg.
Hello.
And on his desk treadmill, for God's sake, Jason Kebler.
Dude, this is incredible. Incredible gadget. We're going to talk about a bad gadget. This is a good gadget. More to come on this at a later date.
Are you tracking your miles, your steps?
Dude, I've been walking for over an hour already.
That's not steps, that's time.
It's going very slowly. Okay. I'm going 0.6 miles per hour. So I've walked like several blocks in 1 hour.
Dude, I'm happy for you. I'll say that. I love efficiency. Before we talk about a bad gadget, I do just want to briefly, it's not even announced because if you subscribe to our newsletter and you follow me on social media, I've probably been very annoying about this at this point, but I just want to give a quick shout out about Dark Wire, my forthcoming book. In short, it's about how the FBI secretly ran its own tech company and encrypted messaging app called Anom to wiretap the world. It's told through the eyes of the agents and the crooks who were there. I've spent years investigating the story of Anom, as 404 Media readers and even Motherboard readers will know, and this book finally reveals like the true stakes of that operation for the first time. It's a melding of true crime and technology, an entertaining story, but one that also has serious privacy implications for everyone. I will put a link in the show notes, but my publisher has given me a discount code to share with our audience. If you enter DW20, I presume that stands for Dark Wire 20. They didn't tell me if that's what it stood for. At checkout, you get 20% off. Again, I'll put the details in the show notes. I'll put a link in the show notes as well to make it easier. Follow that, enter your code, you get a book for cheaper. Last thing, if you pre-order, you also get a long piece of bonus content I've written. I think it's 3,000 or 4,000 words about how I got this story, meeting encrypted phone sellers face-to-face, sneaking into a law enforcement conference, and much more. You only get that if you pre-order, but it's a way to peel back the curtain on the story, sort of like how we do on the podcast. Anyway, I will shut up now. I will stop the promo voice. More on that to come soon. Let's get to...
Wait, what's the code again?
Yeah, it's DW20.
DW20. Where do I enter it?
You enter it on my publisher's website, which will be in the show notes. Emmanuel, I'll send you a link in a minute.
Do they ship to Antarctica?
Doubtful. If you are outside of the US, you can get it on Amazon, and often there are sales there. If you don't like Amazon, there will be another bookseller. If you go to the website in the show notes, there's like every bookseller under the sun you could buy it from, or electronically, or audio versions as well. But thank you for asking.
Cheers. Did pre-order, and I don't have my bonus content yet. When is that coming?
You fill out the details on my publisher's website, and then they will email it to you in 1, 2, or 3 weeks, I believe.
Okay. I pre-ordered the audiobook version because I need people to read to me.
Yeah, I mean, that's basically how I digest books now. It's insane. All right, let's go into it. Jason, this is one written by you. We can and we must clown on the humane AI pin forever. Jason, what is this pin before we get into how terrible it is?
The pin is Siri, but connected to OpenAI's LLM, essentially. It's like a voice assistant that you literally pin to your shirt or your jacket or whatever you're wearing, and then you talk to it. And unlike Siri, it is connected to OpenAI's AI, and therefore, it's just like a voice assistant that is powered by AI and is supposed to be way smarter than current voice assistants. It also costs $600 or $700, costs $700, and then it's $24 a month, and it only works with T-Mobile, and it doesn't connect to your existing phone plan. So it can make calls, but it can only make calls from like a new phone number that is not one that people already know.
Right. So it's this new piece of technology. It's been hyped for a very, very long time. You know, I remember previews of this coming out ages ago. People were thinking, oh, this is finally going to be the wearable that sort of brings AI into the physical world. It's almost that science fiction promise of being able to interface with computers without even thinking about it, all of that sort of thing. Well, review units got sent out, right, to various YouTubers and, of course, media outlets like the Wall Street Journal or whoever. Jason, how bad is it?
So I haven't used it, and I never will use it because I'm not interested in it even remotely.
It's like, and they're not giving us a review.
Yeah, they're not giving us a review unit. And I think that that is a good place to start, which is like when a new piece of hardware comes out, reviewers get it. And increasingly, the people who get it are YouTubers who sometimes they're paid. I mean, I don't think that in this case, Humane is paying people to review their pin. I have no idea. But it used to be the case that like journalists got review units, like they got the new iPhone a week early, they could try it for a week, and then they would write it up. Increasingly, it's like influencers get them. But in this case, it was like a mix of YouTubers and traditional media. So The Verge got one, Wall Street Journal got one, I believe Engadget got one. And universally, the reviews were savage, like really mean.
Much more than normal, right? That's so something was different here. It wasn't just like, oh, this little tech product, I don't know, isn't as good an incremental upgrade as we expected. It was like brutal.
Yeah, I mean, we're not talking like 4 out of 10 reviews or 5 out of 10 reviews. I think I didn't see, you know, a website that had a star rating or like a 1 out of 10 rating, but we're talking reviews that are like, this is the worst gadget I've ever used. Like, I think The Verge's headline was AI Humane Pin, not even close, like just not on the level, like can't believe this shipped in this current state vibes. And so the things that were wrong.
Yeah.
Like The Verge has a really good YouTube video about this where this guy is like walking around New York City and he's asking the Humane Pin to look at things and tell him what it is. And it just like you hit the button on the little pin and you say, hey, what is this? And it will tell you the wrong answer. Sometimes it will take like 10 to 15 seconds to respond. So you're like, hey, what is this? And then there's this really long pause and then like, and then it will say the wrong answer or something.
You could have Googled it in that time or taken a photo or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah. And then there's other examples of it like just erroring out. So it will be like an AI assistant voice and it will just like say a garbled string of text and it's just like a mess. It also has a really short battery life. It overheats. And, you know, I've written a lot about e-waste and gadgets. It's just like there's no way that this thing is repairable. There's no way that this thing is going to last very long. Like it just the sort of that's not touched on in the reviews, but I think that this is like destined to be e-waste quite soon probably. So this happens. It's like people savage on it. And to be clear, this was hyped like a lot. This was the thing that was going to bring AI into the hardware age. It was going to be this assistant, like the biggest thing since the Apple Watch, and it was also going to be something that like replaces our phones. It doesn't have a screen, and so it's like, oh, you're not going to look at your phone as much, which was also one of the promises of the Apple Watch, where it's like, oh, we're going to add another gadget so that you don't use this other gadget. And so this happens, and then should I talk about MKBHD?
Yeah, I think briefly before I want to bring in why we're talking about it. Specifically. So yeah, bring that in.
Yeah, so there's this YouTuber, MKBHD. He is huge. Like, I think probably the biggest gadget reviewer. There's like him, Linus Tech Tips, but Linus doesn't really do this sort of thing, I don't think. But MKBHD is huge. And MKBHD, like the other reviewers, has a similarly savage review. I think he said, like, this is the worst gadget I've ever reviewed yet. Yeah. Like in its current form. Like maybe it will improve over time, but as it stands, it's just like, this is brutal. And this starts, as all good internet debates start, a Twitter war, like a social media war. So there's this, for lack of a better term, like tech bro, hustle culture man named Daniel Vassallo. And he wrote, "I find it distasteful, almost unethical to say this when you have 18 million subscribers. Hard to explain why, but with great reach comes great responsibility. Potentially killing someone else's nascent project reeks of carelessness. First, do no harm." Which is a reference to the Hippocratic Oath that doctors take.
And famously that YouTubers take as well.
Famously, yeah. Like when you sign up for YouTube, they like make you sign a pledge, hold your hand over your heart, etc.
It's self-verification and shit. Yeah. Exactly. So that tweet obviously goes viral. People have responses to it. And you have your own response to it, and it's very well articulated in this article. And that's why we're talking about it here, because look, obviously we're not gadget reviewers. You don't listen to our podcast because you want to know what we think about gadgets. You don't read the website for that as well. But there's something else here, which is like about the shifting narrative around tech, I guess. You know, we go through these cycles of, oh, we all love tech, and now the media has sort of gone against tech, and now it's sort of one of those a little bit. Bring that in, Jason. Like, what was your response sort of to that tweet and more broadly the argument and the position that they're trying to do?
Yeah, it's like MKBHD is not a journalist, but he is a reviewer who relies on, you know, the trust that he's built up with his audience. And the idea that he should say that something is bad is good, like so that he doesn't harm this shitty company's prospects that put out an expensive, overpriced piece of garbage. It's ludicrous. Like, I cannot believe we're having the conversation. And I ignored this conversation for days. Like, so I was on Threads, and like Threads is a small platform. But Threads is a very pro-tech platform that has an extremely busted algorithm. And so debate about this was at the top of my algorithm for like 6 days, like a long time. And I don't know, if you've been on social media ever, it's like things don't last that long on social media. It's like they last 10 minutes, 15 minutes. If there was a main character of the day on Twitter and you never wanted to be that, and... But then the next day it was like the platform had moved on to like kicking the shit out of someone else. In this case, this debate was like the only thing on Threads for a very long time. And I tried to ignore it. I really did. And I was just like, this is crazy. It like goes against everything that I believe, everything that I stand for in terms of what we try to do here as journalists, which is like tell the truth. And the idea that anyone should pull punches just to like, just so founders' feelings don't get hurt is absurd, especially when this is a product that costs $700. It costs $24 a month. They took, you know, over $100 million of funding. They're ex-Apple people. They got so much free press. It's just crazy that we're even talking about, like, we should just be nice to tech companies because they're trying a hard thing, I guess.
Right. And you bring up a parallel, which I think is really, really useful. And to be perfectly honest, I forgot about this product. It feels like a million years ago. But there was something else called Juicero. Is that how you pronounce it?
Juicero. Juicero, right?
Oh, wow. Okay.
Dude, so I was complaining about this. Like, I essentially wrote this blog post in my brain on a car ride to get sushi with my partner. Because I was just ranting. I was ranting at her. I was like, oh my God, I cannot believe like
that sounds fun.
It was really fun for her, I'm sure. And I was like, they're like the fucking Blendini guys. And she was like, what is Blendini? And that's because I thought Juicero was called that. In my mind, that's... I had retconned it. And she thought that was very funny. Do we think Blendini is a good name for the Juicero?
I think it's about
buying a Blendini for sure.
Yeah, man.
It's like a millennial Margaritaville.
Yeah.
We should get that domain, Blendino, whatever you just said, .com. I'll check if it's available in a minute. But what was...
What was that product? A DRM bot. It was like it was the Keurig of juice, where you bought juice pods and you put them into this like very fancy machine. And that machine similarly was, I believe, $700. It was either $600 or $700. It was very expensive. Yeah. The pods were expensive, and the pods expired within like 12 days or something. And if you tried to use the pods after 12 days, the machine would not make the juice. Like it would just turn these pods into juice, and it costs between $600 and $700. And it got $120 million of funding. Google Ventures backed it. Like all these people backed it.
Crazy hype. Yeah.
Then Bloomberg does this piece where they find that you can just squeeze the pods by hand. Like you can take the pods and you can just squeeze them into a glass, and it makes juice of the same quality as this like $700 machine. And so I don't know. I'm from a simpler time where when this came out, it was like the funniest thing that had ever happened, because people just endlessly dunked on it and clowned on it and made fun of it. And then Juicero went away. It like went out of business because it was so shitty. And we didn't really hear about this guy again, like the Juicero guy, until he was in a Vice video, actually. William Turton made a video with him and he was trying to harvest, quote, raw water from the mountains of California. It's just like he had to disappear, essentially. Like it's right. Not like we were like, oh yeah, you wasted tons of people's money, made a shitty product, released it into the world, made people waste their money for something that was like dumb on its face, and you get 1 million chances to do this. Right. It's like you did a bad bye-bye.
If you're a worker and you're working in a company and you make a catastrophic fuck up like that, you don't just like get to try again, you get fired. Unfortunately, you know what I mean? Like, why do these people think they get unlimited tries and they like give batshit awful products, right? And that is what relates to the humane AI pin, right? So like, why must we clown on the humane AI pin? Is it basically the same as before, where these we should call out this bullshit? Or
I mean, I think that you're right, where it's just like most people don't get unlimited access to unlimited funds to do whatever it is that they want. And I think that that is probably a good state of affairs. It's like not every gadget is going to work. There are many examples of gadgets that have been made that had a lot of hype that came out that were underwhelming and they failed. And that hasn't stopped us from trying to make new gadgets. In many cases, some of these very shitty gadgets or things that didn't do well have been iterated on and have become like useful things in the future. I think the Apple Watch is an example of that. Like the first Apple Watch was trash and you were a nerd for wearing one, and you're still a nerd for wearing an Apple Watch, but it's like more useful because Apple figured out that it was a fitness tracker. It wasn't like a wrist computer. It's primarily a fitness tracker. And some people use it for other things, but it's not like it had a very specific use and it was iterated over time. And like that is part of the gadget life cycle that I think is fine. But what is not cool, in my opinion, is releasing something where all of the promo videos and the hype videos like vastly overpromise what a thing can do. You release it, it doesn't work. It was obviously a bad idea at the time. It's like, and it's a bad idea for all of the reasons that we have been talking about AI being like not working for a long time. It's like they put ChatGPT on your wrist and attached a camera to it, not your wrist. They attached it to your like chest.
To your lapel.
It's like, I don't know. Maybe if they made an American flag version, like they could have gotten Congress to wear it or something. But I can't imagine people wearing this. It's heavy. It's expensive. It's hot. It like ruins your clothes. It's just like not a good product. And here we are saying like, let's be nice to these people. I don't get it. I will say that I did list other products in the article that I thought were failures, and I included the Ouya, which was like the Android
games console, right?
Games console.
Yeah.
And the N-Gage, which was Nokia's attempt at a gaming phone from like the very early 2000s, like 2002, 2003.
Mm-hmm.
And people were very mad that I included
those. I was literally about to say, you can't talk about the N-Gage like that. Sorry.
Yeah. So some people do like these products and like, you know, point made, but I don't think that the AI pin is one of them. But I am curious, like, I don't know, what do you all think? Do you think the AI pin is good? And also, do you have any favorite like failed gadgets?
I mean, I'm going to be using our subscriber funds to be buying one of these humane AI pins because they're not sending us one. No, I just entirely agree that we shouldn't be holding back punches in case somebody gets a little bit sad so they don't make their new tech product. You know, just make a better product and then it'll be fairly reviewed. I don't know.
Someone brought up the QCAT. Do you guys remember the QCAT?
No. What's that?
The QCAT was, it was like a barcode reader that you got. It was like in the early 2000s that you got for free as like part of your, I think it's like some ISPs were giving them away. But you scanned barcodes as like a shopping technology. It was, yeah, I mean, it was like really useless. I think it also, it had like a, like commercials on TV had like a tone that the QCAT could read. It was shaped like a little white cat. Yeah. And my parents had one and it never saw the outside of the junk drawer.
That's crazy.
It's just like something that like was giving away. People were giving it away. But yeah, the QCAT was one of those. I think it was like a Radio Shack type gadget.
I've never heard of that, and I'm kind of worried that all Emmanuel is going to say is that because he's a PC gamer, he's going to say the most useless gadget is like the PS5 or some brain dead take. He's going to say something like that. So, you know.
I mean, I hate talking about this because it makes me seem so old, but it's true. But I have now gone through two VR hype cycles.
Huh.
Right? So I covered one when Facebook bought Oculus in 2014. No, 2012, I think. And there was a whole hype around VR and how it's going to take over the world. And that never came about. And the point at which it, like, that fantasy crashed is when people actually got the headsets and used them. And saw the gap between what was promised and what the device actually does, which is what happened here.
Mm-hmm.
And then that whole thing kind of went dormant and then happened again recently, like 2021, 2022 with the metaverse and the Web3 hype. And once again, like, oh my God, it's happening now. This time it's for real, you know, and then once again, it didn't happen. And VR is like a useful, fun technology. And I'm sure that some version of what the AI pin is doing will be useful at some point. But yeah, that's the one that always comes to mind because I was covering at the time and looking at all these fake demos and being like, none of this shit works like you say it does. And I know that because I'm at these conferences trying these devices and they're crap. So yeah, that's the one I always think about.
Mm.
Jason? There is a similar thing that is happening. Like, we're talking about gadgets, but something that has happened is tech CEOs are increasingly unwilling to talk to not even hostile parties, but like neutral, fair journalists. It's like whenever Mark Zuckerberg has something to announce now, he doesn't do an interview with Wired or the New York Times. I mean, he sometimes still talks to those people, but it used to be that like tech CEOs would talk to journalists. But now when they want to announce something or talk about something, they go on like Lex Friedman's podcast, or they go on the podcast, or like Joe Rogan's podcast, or they go on the podcast of not a journalist, but someone who is actively in their corner on every topic. And I think that that is almost what has happened here with the gadgets. It's like they gave it to the Verge, which is great, and to Engadget, which is decent and has tried to be fair over the years. But I think increasingly we're seeing tech companies like only give new products to people who they know are going to be nice to them. And we've seen tech like PR and executives increasingly only talk to people who are going to be nice to them and who are not going to like challenge them, but are not even going to ask follow-up questions if they say something insane.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Just to be clear, it's not us going, oh no, the tech CEOs aren't talking to us. They were never speaking to us to begin with. We haven't lost anything, but yeah, you're right in that there's definitely fewer big wired interviews or anything like that. I mean, there's still some, there's a cover story every so often, but yeah.
Can I say one more thing about the AI aspect of this?
Yeah, of course.
So in March, Sequoia Capital did this little conference, which is on YouTube. You can watch it. And like the keynote speech there was called the AI Opportunity. And Sequoia Capital is one of the big firms investing in everything in the Valley. And basically they lay out the entire market and how things are going to change and how the like software and internet and cloud each respectively like brought in these huge return for their investors, and that AI is like a 10x opportunity for everyone, so everybody should jump in and invest now and blah blah blah. And then at the end of the talk he's like, so far we've spent around $50 billion on like NVIDIA GPU compute for AI, and we've seen $3 billion in returns. And he's like, we don't have any idea how we're going to generate the rest of that money, but we're very confident that we're going to make it. And maybe they will, and maybe they won't. But I think the reason there was so much anxiety about this specific gadget is it's like a rubber hits the road moment for AI, because it's allegedly a mass market consumer product that anyone can use. I can use it. My mom can use it. And it appears to be a total bust, right? And you only need like a couple more of these busts, and like that $50 billion in investment is like going to look pretty bad. And I think that's why there's so much anxiety about like, hey, they're still building it. It's like, don't kill this thing before they're finished building it. And that's not because they're like enlightened or generous. It's because there's a ton of money on the line and people need to make all this money back on the AI investment.
Yeah, that's a really, really good point. All right, let's leave that there. When we come back, we'll be talking about a story that Emmanuel wrote about Instagram advertising, non-consensual AI nude apps. Talking about AI, that's a perfect segue into that. All right, we'll be right back after this.
So my 404 Media colleagues probably remember when I got doxxed, which was a nightmare for everyone involved, mostly me. My name, address, phone number, social security number, and a bunch of other information was leaked online, which led to all these spam calls, harassment, threats, etc. Even if you're not a journalist, a sophisticated network of data brokers is making your personal information available to the highest bidder. I fixed my problem with DeleteMe, which is a service that basically looks you up on all these people search websites and data broker websites and formally gets you removed from them. The subscription service removes your personal info from the largest search databases on the web, helping prevent potential ID theft, doxing, and phishing scams. I'm a real DeleteMe customer. I've been using it for more than 5 years. Sign up is so easy. You just go to their website and then they send you personalized privacy reports showing you what info they found, where they found it, and how they got it removed. Take control of your data and keep your private life private by signing up for DeleteMe, now with a special discount for our listeners. Today, get 20% off your DeleteMe plan when you go to joindeleteme.com/404media and use promo code 404media at checkout. The only way to get 20% off is to go to joindeleteme.com/404media and enter code 404media at checkout. That's joindeleteme.com/404media, code 404media.
All right, and we are back. As mentioned, this one is written by Emmanuel. Instagram advertises non-consensual AI nude apps. First of all, what are these ads and what are they advertising, Emmanuel?
So these ads are for a few types of AI tools that we've talked about a lot. Broadly, they are the nudify type of apps where you feed an app a photograph of someone and it uses that AI to make that person appear nude. And then the other is more the stable diffusion AI model tool where you feed the tool a few images, the AI learns how to reproduce the likeness of someone, and then you can recreate the likeness of that person and make them nude, sexual positions, whatever you want.
Yeah, that makes sense. And how many are we talking, both on the ad side and on the app side? Because when I was sent some of these examples, and then you were already looking into it, I think, right? You'd already built up like a pretty big repository of these ads and these apps. I got sent some and then I sent them over to you as well. How many are we talking? Because from what I remember, it was a shit ton, basically.
So I specifically looked at 5 apps, but each of them had dozens of advertisements that we can see, both because some sources sent those ads to us, and then also Facebook has an ad library tool where you can see who bought what ad, when it ran, on what platforms it ran, and that's how we were able to do most of the reporting. I should note, as was the case with a story I wrote recently about an app on the Google Play Store, if you go to Apple's App Store and look at the app, it just looks like an innocuous face swapping app. There's no talk of nudity, adult content, pornography, nothing like that. They can't put that stuff there because that would go against Apple's policy. Apple reviews those pages before they go live. So they look like fun, insert yourself into a Marvel movie type of app. When I wrote about this Google Play app, what they did was advertise the ability to make deepfake porn on porn sites. Mm. And what we're seeing, which is bad, obviously, but we are essentially now seeing that same type of ad on Instagram. And not just us, many people are seeing it. Like I said, these were pretty widespread because several people saw them and sent them to us.
Yeah. So whereas before, or kind of at the same time, really, it's just we did one story before the other. Yeah. As you say, they were originally advertised on porn sites like, hey, you want to undress somebody, use this app. And now we're seeing those ads just straight out there on Instagram. And for me, that was one of the main takeaways is that when people think about, deep fakes and nudify apps, like they may think of it being sort of an underground thing, like, oh, you have to go to a specific forum or a specific website that deals in deep fake non-consensual imagery, and maybe you have to download it there. But no, it's being advertised right in the open, right in your face, basically. And, of course, the ads aren't going to get delivered to everybody. It's going to be somewhat targeted, but this is me speculating a little bit. But if you're, male between 18 and 35 or some demographic like that, it's like, okay, here's an ad for that sort of material. Like, does that sound fair?
That's speculative because Jason and I wrote this story based on a FOIA of a police report in a Washington State High School, and what we saw there is that these teens who use one of these nudify apps to undress their classmates and cause a huge mess in their community, the police reports note that they found the ad on TikTok. And we've seen other reporting about this, and this is just how people find these apps now. They're not on the dark web, they're not on some illicit site. It's just you're on Instagram, like one of the world's most popular social media networks, and there it is in your face telling you that you can undress your friends.
Yeah. So Instagram, slash Meta, however you want to phrase it, is receiving money for running these ads, right? Like these deepfake app companies are being like, I want to advertise my app. I'm going to pay Instagram to get it in front of people. So there's that whole aspect. When you went to Instagram, what was the deal there? How did that interaction start and how did it progress and what did they say?
So, I mean, there's a little dance we do now with the companies where we want to give them enough information to prove that we know what we're talking about and show them what we're seeing. But we also don't want to like put all our cards on the table right away because we're trying to figure out their ability to moderate this stuff. So, for example, I start reporting on this story. I send a request for comment to Instagram, and I send one example, like one very bad example, one example of a very bad ad that we saw. I send an email. They get back to me. They're like, hey, thanks for this. We want to give you comment. Do you mind sending us everything that you've seen? And at that point, I go look at the first one that I sent them. It's been taken down. I go look at the other ones that I've seen, they haven't been taken down. And at that point, I can kind of tell, like, they will take action once they see them, but it's not as if, like, once I alerted them to the issue, they went back into their ad library and did some thorough search and cleaned it up. I sent them the rest of the stuff, then they cleaned it up.
Yeah.
That's how they did it. And their comment was, you know, we enforce our policies when we're alerted to violations or something like that.
When a journalist sends it to you so you can provide an informed statement, and then when you basically beg, please could you send more examples? It's like they're not being proactive at all.
They're not being proactive. I would say it's not just journalists. I think so one of these apps ran campaigns as far back as January, I think. And you can go through the ad library and see which ads were moderated and which weren't. And it's very inconsistent. And I can imagine that someone saw this ad saying, like, make an image of anyone nude with a picture of Kim Kardashian, and some like Good Samaritan or something flagged that to them and they took it down. But the ad unit that was right next to it, which was the same thing with a different celebrity, nobody flagged and that one stayed up.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not systematic or anything.
Yeah.
Jason.
So, okay. We've written so much about how hard it is to moderate platforms, like over the course of our careers. And we've talked about it on this podcast. It's like you have billions of people doing billions of things, and you have a smaller number of humans who are moderating this, and you have their automated systems moderating it, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And it is very difficult, and things are going to slip through the cracks at some point. Like, I want to preface this with, this is nominally a very hard thing to do. And yet, time and time again, we are able to find things in seconds once we hear about them, or they just arise in our feeds in some way. And then we go to and use Facebook's own tools that they have, which is the Meta Ad Library, and we find them immediately. Mm-hmm. After they've gone viral elsewhere. It's like this went viral over the weekend because people started noticing this. And we know that it's a problem because, as Emmanuel said, it's like every platform has faced this in some way. And the main way that these apps spread is through other platforms. It's not always ads. Like, sometimes it's just organic posts and people sharing links to them and things like that. But in this case, it's like, this is... Facebook is making money from this. And that is the big distinction I want to make here. It's like we agree that Facebook has the right to be so big that it can just take ads from anyone, and it can say, we're a huge platform, we don't have time to review this stuff. And it can just have, you know, whatever, like drugs, hacked accounts, credit, like stolen credit cards, like I have written about, nudify apps that actively advertise sort of like you know, non-consensual deepfake tools. It's like we have agreed as a society, or rather like the US government has agreed, that it's not going to hold Facebook accountable for this stuff yet. And it is mind-boggling to me that they are accepting money from these companies, putting these ads on their platform with no human review, or like whatever human review is happening is not good enough. And I think that it would be hard and difficult to say people can't mention this stuff anywhere on any of its platforms, because if it was just regular content, that is very hard to moderate. But when there's a financial transaction and they are unable to catch this stuff, that is mind-boggling to me. It's like, we are a very small company, but we know, like, when people buy an ad directly with us, we know who is buying the ad directly with us. It's like, we've decided that anyone can give Facebook money to advertise anything they want, and there's no human review whatsoever. It's crazy. Or maybe there is human review, but something is breaking down.
Here's what I would do if I was Facebook. I would have a robust trust and safety team dedicated to the ads business. And then when one of the ad buyers does something that violates Facebook's policies very clearly in a very bad way, like with one of these Nudify apps, I would then do some sort of investigation to see if they had bought other bad ads, right? So it's like the simplest thing you can do is you look at one of these apps that was advertised on Instagram and do exactly what I did on the ad library tool and see what other ads they bought. And it's like, even that tiny little step that I can do as an outsider, they didn't take. So I don't know. It seems like if you could do that, and then you could do, I don't know, assume that they're buying from different accounts, is like, are the buyers coming from the same IP? Do you need to like IP ban a buyer or something like that? Are they using the same credit card? Is it the same name? Is it, and it's just like none of that is happening. And I guess it's because they think they can get away with it.
And surely it's they're doing something sophisticated. And by they, I mean the ad buyers are doing something sophisticated, because when I wrote about the drugs, like sometimes at least, when I wrote about the drugs, sometimes it was like they were buying Facebook accounts and then they were pivoting the Facebook accounts and buying the ads. And they were like able to get past Facebook's moderation because they were sort of like pivoting the accounts after it had enough like history to be able to buy ads without intervention from Facebook. All that said, it's like you can find this stuff on the ad library in 1 second, like 1 second. And so if I were Facebook, I would hire a journalist, I would pay them a shitload of money, and I would say, follow these people on Twitter who write about this stuff, who know what they're talking about. Look at what they're talking about. And when something goes viral, don't take days and days and days to respond and delete this stuff. It's like, figure your shit out. This is not hard. This is not like some of this stuff is hard, as I prefaced, but like using their ad library to find illegal content or things that actively, go against their policies. I could do it 50 times in the time that it took me to say this sentence. Like, it's not hard.
I think you just gave us our little TikTok of this podcast when you said something like, this shit is easy, sort your shit out. Actually, we can't put that on TikTok, can we? Because they'll remove the video probably or something. All right, we'll leave that there. I know, Emmanuel, you're continuing to work on this. Maybe we'll bring that up in another ep about some other developments around the story, right? But let's leave that there. If you're listening to the free version of the podcast, I'll now play us out. But if you're a subscriber, we're going to talk about a service Jason found that threatens to put AI-generated mentions of specific products into Reddit threads, potentially polluting results there as well. You can subscribe and gain access to that content at 404media.co. As a reminder, 404 Media is journalist-founded and supported by subscribers. If you wish to subscribe to 404 Media and directly support our work, please go to 404media.co. You'll get unlimited access to our articles and an ad-free version of this podcast. You'll also get to listen to the subscribers-only section where we talk about a bonus story each week. Another way to support us is by leaving a 5-star rating and review for the podcast. That stuff really helps us out. Here's one of those reviews. Quote, 404 is on the cutting edge. Thank you very much. This has been 404 Media. We will see you again next week.